Welcome to Provoke, Evoke, or Go Home, Session 8. Hokey smokes, Bullwinkle, time flies. You know, with any luck at all, there's been some transformation going on out there. At the very least, some shifts in the background for each of you. You know, welcome all to you. Glad you're here. And what's really interesting and fascinating for me is to hear at times what has moved, but more importantly, where it has moved in you. So as part of our check-in today is about what and how to poke roles. And we're going to do a pulse check. We're going to work with this key agility about provocative inquiry, take a look at roles, what's the limitations of that, what to poke, and then set up practice time so that you can recast your life in new roles. So I know we sort of had a challenge getting everything together with respect to, just how much time you might be able to spend together to be in a buddy. Ideally, that's set up this week so that you can go ahead and just knock it out, and maybe you'll play with both stories and roles and whatever else you want to play with in terms of using either the tools or even using the core dynamics work to absence some of the stuff that may surface and show itself. And remember, you can always simply use a script and read right from it. So if you did get a chance to poke some stories, either on your own or with someone else, what happened? And how did the idea of rewriting your script play itself out? This is the part where y'all talk.
Well, this is Shirley. I just have spent the past 8.5 days working on $1 million real estate deal.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call this morning at 7:45 saying that from the customer that he was withdrawing, he wanted to withdraw the contract. And, you know, I think in the past I could have gone to a very negative place and made up a lot of stories. But for some reason, well, I chose another script about that, and I was just thinking as I was waiting to call in about the difference in where I have been in the past in my scripts and my roles and where I am today, and it's like I was just saying to myself, what an awesome learning experience. It was such an honor to have the opportunity to navigate through that negotiation and with the person that I did it with, who would have normally intimidated me because he's very much an authority figure and very wealthy. And so it was just, I totally have changed my script.
Wow. Well, that's very freeing.
It
especially
is.
When you start to rewrite the script out of the potential disaster scenario. So, for example, in that situation, you could have written the script that it was a disaster and there was all this loss, et cetera, without actually knowing that potentially down the road it could have gone even worse in some way.
Yes, yes.
You know, when something doesn't go the way we want it to, we tend to think that had it gone the way we wanted it to, everything would have worked out hunky-dory. You know, if only that bridge wasn't closed, if only this relationship didn't happen that way or end that way, if only I got this job or this promotion. But we don't know. We don't know where it would have gone from there. There's a wonderful movie with Gwyneth Paltrow called Sliding Doors that shows a couple of possibilities of where it could all go, you know, and it just opens our eyes to the idea that, again, the key point about stories is that in the absence of clarity, in the presence of uncertainty, we will fill in the blanks with the story that is most easily extrapolated from our current situation. And then we'll make up all sorts of stuff about it. That's great. Rewrite the script. Why not? We're going to be making up stories anyway. Why not make up good ones?
Yep. And we get to choose.
Yeah. Who else? What happened as you played with stories? If you did, or even with some earlier piece of the work?
Well, okay, this is Margie. I think a big part of what I've done in the last week is rewrote the story about what I need to do in the course of my days. As a perfect example, although in my old story, I would feel that because I didn't get a few things done that I usually get done on Mondays, that meant I couldn't take today and take the dog out to the dog park and go play and the day. And I rewrote that story and said, hey, you know, life will still go on if I don't complete that one thing that I had to do. And thoroughly enjoyed, you know, running all the errands with the dog, doing her thing and taking her to the dog park, and got home in plenty of time to get ready for this call, and that's it for my day. So that's my new script for today.
See, that's wonderful. Because what we forget is we forget that we're making up the story as we go. And we make up the story with rules in the story, and we don't even notice what's comprising the story. And then that story affects our next experience. And what you articulated just now was that you weren't going to let an old story of supposed to, you know, like the supposed to chapter. You know, this is the chapter, it's probably got a supposed to worksheet.
Like that.
You know, and a few little tips in the margins and things like that. When you're working with supposed tos, you know, and what you did was that you didn't let the supposed to part of the story affect today's experience. And that's one of the consequences of stories, is that they, because they are history or historic, meaning they tend to be past, they begin to affect our present time experience. And our clients will live out of the story. And then out of that story, they will make up new stories that are going to affect their future, and then they'll live out of those stories. But if we lived out of the story that we've never been to the moon, therefore, the old story or the old maxim, the past equals the future, we would never get there. We would never have gotten to the moon because we had never had before that. And in the moment when John F. Kennedy in this country proposed that, you know, the other thing that people don't always remember is that he proposed not just that, you know, we'll land a man on the moon, but the part that they often forget, which was actually a critical part of the story, was, and get him back safely. That was part of the story, the narrative he was weaving. And so in this country, in this world, we are living out a global narrative. And we are prisoner to that narrative. So if we want to change our lives, it's valuable to provoke the story out of the frame that says it is truth rather than a story. So let's move a little forward here. Let's see. Sanyama. Okay. So who's going to challenge you're facing right now that seems to be born in relationship to a story? What's not where you want it to be?
Hey, this is Dave. David, I've certainly got one.
Okay, David, you're on. You open to play?
I'm open to play, man.
Cool.
So I am going to do the first group coaching kind of mastermind program in May.
Mm-hmm.
And I am scared less that nobody or that I won't get people to show up. Because I guess I've never landed on this moon.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
So I've just in place some free.
I'm going in and out, David.
Oh, am I? How about now?
Yeah. Okay, now you're pretty straight. But if you're wandering around the room, the signal is varying.
Oh, no, I'm not wandering. I probably was playing with or something or touching. What I was saying is I have a lot of free to get people interested, aged. I am wondering how to get it full and have to get a day job
and still stay with the day job. Okay, so I hear that. You're wondering how to get it full and stay with the day job. What's the story you're making up?
Or about the
outcome.
Sorry, not have a day job, not go get a day job.
Right.
I don't know if that's clear. Right, okay.
Right, not go get a day job. Okay.
Right.
So what's the story you're making up about the outcome of this?
The story is that it's going to be difficult to convince people to join, which there's a problem right there, instead of attracting people, it's going to fall flat. The offer is going to fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is like I feel safe with the online part, but the offline, like if I start offering it locally, that the offer is definitely going to fall flat. Online, I don't feel so as worried about drawing people in because I've drawn most of my clients into online.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But offline or in person has been, I don't have much experience with it.
Okay. So part of the story is that because you don't have much experience with it, it therefore means that it won't work? Or there's a high probability that it won't work?
High probability that it won't work.
Okay.
So my
now, what's the full story, the extended story? The one that's past the question, if I don't enroll this, then?
Hmm. If I don't enroll this, then I have to I have to focus on income or ways to make a living that I don't really want to. Whether that's getting a job of some kind or getting some extra training gigs, and that'll take my focus away from this, and it's like feels like kind of a downward spiralish feeling of, sucking away. Yeah.
So, you know, just as a sidebar, nowhere in that story that you've just relayed is the idea that even if you wound up getting some other training gigs, that might actually contribute to you having this mastermind group, because right now the story is that it would get in the way.
Right, right. Yes.
Yeah. And the same thing with the job that you might have to get, that it actually wouldn't lead to meeting people that would fulfill the direction that you're seeking, because the story is that if I'm not in it all the way, then it's not going to be productive.
Right.
Yeah.
This or that.
Yep. This or that. Nice story, huh?
Sure, it sure keeps things actively stressful.
Well, yeah, it would, because you actually have no luxury of space.
No.
For the story to come out any other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, in the world of stories out there, there's a story where David gets a job or picks up some additional trainings that give him the relaxation about finances, that when he interacts with people, they're more attracted to being around him and they want to know more about who he is. Plus, it introduces him to other people that he may not be in contact with right now that might well be people that would lead to people who would want to participate with him.
Yes, and the funny thing is I completely just omitted that I'm launching an online program with another guy next week, and we already have 20 spots filled. We're going to probably fill 50, maybe more. But I omitted the story I've been caught in is filtered out the requests I'm getting for, hey, wanting to work one-on-one. I just got one, or work in another group program. I got an email like that today. So.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a whole kind of woven story about how it has to go in order for you to be successful.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're going to do a little practice of Sanyama, but you already see they're beginning to poke holes in the story about how flimsy that story actually is, right?
Yes. Yes, good. Indeed.
Okay, so I'm just going to ask you to close your eyes. Anyone else who's facing a challenge or has some sort of situation where you're curious about what the next move in your own game is can play this exercise. So as you close your eyes, you'll notice that my voice is a little bit more present, and other sounds in your background may also be a little bit more present. Again, nothing to do about that. You don't have to try and focus on it. You don't have to try and ignore it. It's just that's what happens when you close your eyes. You might also notice that your sense of touch is slightly heightened. You might notice temperature. You might notice a breeze if it's in your environment. Again, nothing to do about it. No need to focus on it. No need to try and ignore it. That's just what's there. You'll also notice that you have thoughts. And these thoughts are kind of like, well, they seem to have their own identity, like a drop flying off the crest of a wave of the ocean. Comes up for a moment, seems to be separate from the ocean, goes back down into the ocean. So I'm just going to ask you to notice the bunch of droplets of thoughts that are flying up off the wave of the ocean. And now, just notice that those droplets, while they do seem to have an individualist separateness, actually are born from a background of that giant, vast ocean of silence. And they return to it. And if you allow yourself, you can begin to plunge into the depths of that silence and see how alive it is, even while being silent. You can begin to feel and notice the silence of that vast ocean of silence more than you notice the droplets of thoughts. The droplets will still be there. But if you allow yourself, you can begin to notice that silent background. And into that pool of silence, I'm going to ask you to just release this question. And whatever answer you get, no matter how absurd or oblique or even direct the answer may be, and even no answer is an answer, whatever that answer is, that's what's there for you. So into that pool of silence, put this question. What do I have to relinquish in order for me to play lightly with my future as it's coming towards me? What do I have to relinquish in order for me to play lightly with my future as it's coming toward me? And whatever answer you get is what you get. And what's there, David?
The need for control. They pretty much slam me in the face.
Yeah. Because the background story is that if you don't control it, it won't work out.
Yeah.
The other background story that accompanies that one and support one is the illusion that you actually ever had control and things turned out because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael, Steve, can you repeat that remarkable question again?
Yes. What is it that I need to relinquish in order for me to play lightly with the future that's coming towards me? You're welcome. So, that one hit you smack in the face, huh?
Yeah. came out of the darkness, man. Bam!
Yes, I call that the rude rock of reality, getting whacked in the head with it. It's like, who threw that?
Exactly. And what wow. What I'm experiencing is, having gone through that or through that, is that no matter if I get the result that I seek from that paradigm, nothing is resolved, changes. I don't feel another situation to create
right.
that most.
Yeah,
I would just draw something else there.
Yes, exactly. And the interesting thing about it, David, is that we pride ourselves on the attempts we make, and when events do turn out, we tend to take ownership in the I made that happen category, immediately dismissing all of the factors that had to go how they had to go in order for that to occur, that we had absolutely frickin' nothing to do with.
Yeah.
In Western culture, we're obsessed with thinking we make stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, we are simply a participant in the event of them happening. We have mm-hmm. our part. But we, none of us, make the play of life happen alone.
Yeah.
The sooner we get over that, the sooner we can, if one wants to, take pride in the degree to which we successfully fulfilled our participation in the event. Like, I did my job on the team well. You get the difference?
Yeah, and what's coming up for me is how often that celebratory period, that full ownership can be small, and then it can be actually dismissed, at least for what I've done, dismiss the success or whatever. And what came up also was that gratitude can be missing for, yeah, I did my part, but kind of gratitude for, wow, that was cool that it all happened and I was a player in it, but I didn't necessarily make it happen like I thought I did.
Yes. And you're going to read this probably, you know, all of you, in a blog that I'm just going to be putting up tomorrow that came through yesterday, which is, we also need to be grateful for what didn't happen.
Ah.
See, we're often grateful for what happened, what we got, but we're not necessarily as prone to being grateful for what didn't happen that would have gotten in the way. The absence of things that facilitated the event going.
Yeah.
You know, like there wasn't a flood.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a car that came into our house. There wasn't a, you know, whatever, some sort of other kind of intervention that got in the way. Everything that occurs is a function of what happens and what doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to be truly grateful, we need to be grateful for both.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great point. I think sometimes, at least for me, it's a cultural thing sometimes of don't look at it, the misfortune of others. Sometimes, like, I'm grateful that I'm not homeless on the street, as if that's a judgment on someone who's homeless. I think sometimes the focus on gratitude should only be on the positive and not on the quote-unquote negative or what didn't happen, which isn't always negative. But I just wonder about that.
Yes. Well, I am grateful every day that, you know, I don't get run over by a car. It's got nothing to do with whether or not that happens to anybody else. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'm grateful that there wasn't some sort of power outage at a certain point in time. This event, this webinar right now, it is both a function of everything that is happening and everything that is not happening that would obstruct its possibility. My computer could crash.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? I'm grateful that it hasn't crashed.
Michael, this is Steve. How is that different, being grateful for something that not happening and looking on the bright side? Is there a difference?
Yes. You know, there is a difference. Is looking on the bright side is attempting to make something, typically, I'll put it this way, it's attempting to make one feel better about the fact that something crappy has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So people say, well, look on the bright side. Okay, but usually you're already caught in the mesh of something has happened and you've labeled it crappy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually a post-event experience versus an in-the-moment recognition that says, this event is a product of everything that contributes to it, both by its presence and its absence. Which means you can be grateful for everything, not just when it goes well, for the things that appear to go well. I'm grateful for my experience in the hospital when I had triple bypass surgery, that the virus that's currently running through some of the hospitals was not present either in my ward or in my area. know? I'm grateful that my surgeon made it to the hospital that day, that there wasn't some accident that prevented him from doing it. You know, so there's a lot there. It's not just a question of looking on the bright side of things. It is, I am deeply, deeply appreciative of how events occur. And I'm acutely aware of it. And a lot of the stories that we make up are the stories of either what we have or haven't done, but most of the time we're busy pointing to how it's supposed to go and what should have happened. We don't include the magnificence, as we were talking about last week in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, is that for someone who is a lead player, Hamlet, and has this whole play about him, and these two characters, Rosencrantz, who are simply courtiers, they actually have an entire life going on, and Hamlet is a bit player in their life. We don't include the whole. We only make selective acceptance of pieces of the whole. So in terms of this event, David, to come back around, what is the biggest thing with respect to control that will also be the easiest for you to start letting go of?
Trying to make it happen exactly how my I have a weird feeling often of like it's just in feeling that's also very active and forward moving. When I get in this, I need to make like this, like really perfectionistic almost.
Right.
Like it, and causes me a lot of stress.
Yeah. Now, if you're full of stress because of the, I have to make sure every detail goes exactly the way I think it should go in order for it to turn out well, let me ask you this. How attractive is that?
At all.
To anyone else's energy, it's kind of like, wow, that guy is really stressed. I want to learn how to be that way. I think I'll take his mastermind course.
Yeah. Yeah, I sign up for that, unfortunately.
Yes. So let me hear from some other people. You know, just as a sidebar, at one point I actually thought about putting together an endarkenment workshop. Everybody in the, you know, like 80s and 90s were doing enlightenment stuff. I thought they'd do endarkenment. I figured it was probably a market for that. And people would have to pay $10,000, and when they showed up to the event, there'd be an envelope on the chair that eventually some person, who I'd pay maybe $50 to come in and read, and say, read the envelope and say, I just took your $10,000 and I went to Fiji with it. Do you feel endarkened yet? Okay. So, who else? What if you did play with this Sanyama, and that's what that is, that technique is called Sanyama. When you put people into the state of connection with consciousness, with connection with that sort of larger sense of self, and you drop a question in there, instead of putting it into your linear thinking cabinet and your, you know, your home calculator and looking for the answer there, you get answers that you might not expect. And that's what it requires. But you do have to get people there first. You can't just say, okay, if you just kind of go into your higher self, and that, it doesn't. Because people will go to the intellect thinking that it's higher self. You got to give them a chance to get there. You have to help them segue. So, for people on the call, who else played with it? And if so, what happened?
I have a question on the process.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the Sanyama PDF.
Yep.
Where do you, as the coach, throw them with that question?
What question do you pop into it? Are you asking how do you ascertain where to direct them with the question?
Yeah, like when you ask the relinquish question.
Yep.
I don't see where in your step-by-step where that...
It's not going to be there because that question is presenced by the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that question requires you to be in a state of being, you know, as you're guiding, dropping into that pool of consciousness yourself so that you can let the question surface that is the most appropriate question for that client. It's actually a function of in your presence as you step out of. There is somebody who's munching carrots or bugs. Are you on? If you would put yourself on mute, if you are munching. As you absence any attachment to how to do it or whether or not you're going to be good enough or whether or not you're going to be able to have the question necessary or even have the right question, as you take that out of your presence, what happens is that you start to open a space within yourself for the question your client needs you to ask to emerge. And the more space...
Yeah, I get that part. Yeah, but I'm sorry.
So that's where that question came from.
Yeah.
It came from there.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea before we got to that point that I was going to ask him that question.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, what I did know was that Sanyama was a useful technique for this situation.
Gotcha, okay.
Did I know what the question was? Hell no.
No, never, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So let's keep motoring. Now you have a little example of Sanyama and what it can do. It can smack people right in the face out of the black.
As we've just witnessed.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are roles? Nope. See, if we don't play with this stuff, it gets way too significant, okay? Ah, yes, these are roles. A team, a community, etc., all of that stuff.
You have to relinquish so your slides are in order.
Huh?
What will you have to relinquish so your slides are in order?
Oh, they are in order. Okay. So, oh, wow. Okay. You got a life of your own. Thank you. So we have community, we have parent, we have family, we have business people, all of our roles. These are the kinds of roles that we take on. From the dictionary definitions, a role is a performing, you know, in performing arts, it's a part or a character in a play, film, etc., to be played. Psychology is the part played by a person in a particular social setting, influenced by his expectation of what is appropriate, i.e., I'm the leader, or I'm the follower, or I'm the partner, or I'm the support function. The role is also the customary function of what someone will fulfill in an organization. I fulfill the role of vice president of operations or CFO, which is often chief frugal officer. From the French, the word means part played by a person in life. And this is we've been talking about this and we're going to keep talking about it because identities is one of the places where we get trapped the most. And we fuse our identity with the character we're playing. The typical example of this is mom. Or the typical example in the male is hunter-gatherer, provider. And if all of a sudden the woman in the household is making more or making that more easier, now all of a sudden the guy in attempting to fulfill his role gets upset, frustrated, challenged, whatever you want to call it. But in any event, regardless of that, if, you know, if mom thinks that her identity is mom, and it's hard not to, by the way, because you do carry this child, you do get, you know, you do spend the rest of your life in that frame of reference, in that story, and, you know, then they leave the house and you're no longer fulfilling the function of the part called mom, meaning the lines that you use are no longer required, the actions of this and that and the other thing are no longer required, the blocking, so to speak, in the theater terms, the direction. When that's no longer there, people have a loss of sense of self. Now, we think of it that it's a loss of sense of self that occurs there. No. The loss of sense of self occurred when we fused our identity with the role in the first place. The minute we fuse our identity with husband, wife, parent, father, vice president, etc., whatever we want to call it, the minute we fuse our sense of self with that role, we have lost our identity. We play a lot of parts. Over our time, we're going to play, you know, child. We may play sibling. We may play friend. We may play victim. If we go into the more philosophical roles, we may play conqueror. We may play outsider. We may play insider. And then as we get older, we start to play the roles in the work world. And then in our community, community leader, rabble-rouser, rebel, we'll play all these roles. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They all have their entrances and their exits. And each person, each man in his time plays many parts. This is what makes up a role. This is how it is. The image, how one looks when one is in the costume of the role. When I was coaching rock bands, they were all wearing the grunge outfit. You know, the plaid jeans, et cetera, et cetera. In the hip-hop culture, they were wearing the pants around your knees outfit. They were busy thinking that they were rebelling and being individual while wearing a costume of a group. In fact, one of the biggest groups in the world is the people of nonconformists. The role requires certain behaviors. You know, when you're in the grunge, it requires this. If you're in hip-hop, it requires that. If you're a celebrity, it requires this. You look at the history, how the role has previously been performed by other people, and then we start to imitate that role. You can start to see how the sense of self and who we are in our own individual expression in the world starts to diminish the more the role gets taken on. The lines, which are the language frequently used by that character. You know, people are taking on the role of coach and they have certain language and lines. You go into the IT world and the role of engineer has certain shortcuts, acronyms, language. Emotions, the feelings the character has access to. You know, you learn sometimes in sports that you're not supposed to have emotions, or you're supposed to only have these emotions. Physicality, what the body shape is and how it moves. You start to imitate that in the role. The mindset, how people think and what they think about. And then the sense of self derived from the story's repetition. From the role being played again and again and again and again. And there have been examples of people who have, in the theater, lost themselves in the role, so to speak. Now all of a sudden they're playing out their bad boy image. Knowing, knowing what comprises the role can allow you as the coach to intercede and challenge any and every one of these particular elements. Here's the limitations of the roles. Your possibilities are defined by your perception of the role and its job or responsibilities. This is where people get caught in it. They go, that's not possible. Why? Because that's not what this role does. As an actor, I used to be on stage with people, and they would be busy telling both the author and the director whether or not their character would say those lines or make those moves. I found that to be extraordinary. Number one, they didn't create the frickin' character. They're interpreting the character. You know? And he's telling the writer, my character wouldn't do that. And when I was directing a person, when I was directing plays, because I did that as well as writing and acting, I go, really? Oh, yeah, my character wouldn't do that. I said, so let me actually see if I can understand. I said, you, in playing the part of that character, don't want to do that. He says, no, my character wouldn't do it. I said, no, you don't actually know what your character would and wouldn't do. The more valuable question is, what would support that character doing that? Where would the character have to be coming from in order to do that? So the role has behaviors, beliefs, actions, opportunities, thoughts, emotions, and a full expression of self, all of which that get constrained when we live simply through the role. There's lots of possibilities. If we can stay with the anchor and the gravity of sense of self and recognize that we're fulfilling roles, then we can play the roles with verve and vigor. And we can even modify and adapt how that role is played and play it like no one has ever played that role before. Look at the job of leaders in corporations. They're playing the role historically in most cases. It's because there's already an image and behaviors and beliefs and actions and opportunities, thoughts and emotions that are supposed to go along with that role. And when they begin to challenge those, take a look at the friction and stuff it creates around them. There's a huge attachment and risk to challenging the way the role is even played, let alone that that role is not you. There will be a you. There was a you long before you took on any role you've taken on. And there will be a you long after you relinquish many roles. There is always a you. Think of yourselves as in a giant play, if you would, or if you're an online gaming person, you're in a giant game and you happen to have stepped into a character that has particular powers. It doesn't mean you can't play other characters. So here's the place to poke. Poke that it's a truth rather than a character being played. Poke that something disastrous will happen if the role is changed. Roles are not who we are. They're just something we take on for a specific purpose at a specific time in a specific situation, and then we just get caught in the role and we forget, and then the role takes over. Here's some key questions. You don't necessarily have to use these questions. They're not the definitive questions. These questions are a sample or an example, but not the ones that are the ones. But you'll get the essence of the question. Image, is that how you want to represent yourself? Behaviors, what actions will change if that role is gone? History, who says the role's got to be played that way? you know, lines. I mean, history, there you go back to it. As mother or father, who says the role has to be played? And, in fact, most of the time people try to change the way the role has been played in that realm, mother and father. They don't want to parent the way their mother and father did. They want to play the role differently. The lines you speak, what would you say if the role was changed? And let's even take that out into the philosophical or conceptual. If the role, what would you be saying if the role of victim in your story was changed? What lines would the non-victim say in that story, in that scenario? What would the hero say? How would it feel differently? What body supports your new role? Just because we have the body that we have, it doesn't mean that that's the only body we can inhabit. One of the things that I was always amazed about was Robert De Niro's ability to, he was like Play-Doh. He would be in a different body. He would move differently. He would develop it or add to it. Christian Bale was another actor who did that kind of thing. He would just be in a different body. Laurence Olivier took it from the point of, what's the nose of this character? Once he got the nose, that was his identity. He felt he could live the character. The mindset. How does this character think that you don't think? And you come across this one in clients a lot. They're used to habitually thinking about things the way they normally think. And if they're not successful to the degree that they want to be, then they're simply used to habitually thinking the way that character who is not successful to that degree that they want to be thinks. And the identifications, who will you be if you're not seeing yourself as just as the role you're playing? Who else might you be? So this is your game this week. What roles do you want to poke? Which roles have taken over? And which aspect of the role are you fulfilling unconsciously? Meaning you haven't elected to go, oh, you know what? I actually don't like the lines of Dad that way. I had that one ambush me one time. The lines of parent. You know, the dialogue that the parent was supposed to speak. I was, my son was doing something that, you know, children do. And I said, no, you can't do that. And we started to get into an argument. And he says, well, why not? And he challenged my role as parent. And before I could stop it, it came out of my mouth. Because I said so. And I didn't realize I picked up the lines from both my parents. I was not in that moment in the present with him. I was absolutely in a role of parent. That's any number. There was a myriad of things I could have said in that moment. That's the one that came out. I didn't even know it was in there. So poking roles and stories together is great fun. So I'm just going to ask you to see if you will step out on the skinny branches on this call at this moment in time and state, at least for the purpose of an experiment, what role you're going to poke this week.
This is Shirley. I'm going to poke at over and underachiever.
Great. Great. Well, you can poke either or both. That's up to you.
I think they sort of go hand in hand.
Yes, they are, because there's a role in behind that, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the one that sources those behaviors.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, this is Margie. I was thinking the same one.
Okay. And listen, by the way, if there isn't one up there that you want to poke, feel free to add your own.
This is Sherry. I was going to do the overachieving one also.
Cool. Great. Poke that. Poke the story of that. Great exercise. Who else? What are you poking? What are you poking, David?
Oh, I guess entrepreneur. Although I want a flailing entrepreneur, but I don't know if that's.
Listen, you can put that on there.
Flailing entrepreneur.
Flailing entrepreneur.
That.
I love that.
You can poke the myth of Sisyphus if you want to.
I thought flailing was better than failing, at least.
Yeah. Great. Flailing entrepreneur. Fabulous. Poke that.
Bill.
Hey, Molly or Steven?
I don't know. I'm just consumed with the over-under on the white smoke at the Vatican right now. So.
It sounds like I've gone to Vegas. Yeah, I'll take the over-under for 5 points. How about you, Molly?
I have got the faintest.
Okay.
Can you reframe this again in regards to the roles? You don't have to go through each one, but.
Well, which part would you like reframed?
For example, over underachiever. About poking that.
Let's back up a few. If that's the role, these are some of the things to poke in that role. The image of that. What are the behaviors? What's the history? Who says the role has to be played that way? What are the lines? What are the emotions that the over-underachiever goes through? Which, by the way, is probably a roller coaster. Right? I'm master of the world! No, I'm not. I can't affect anything. I suck. I'm master of the world. No, God, I'm terrible. You know, I'll never be anything. I'm a slacker. I'm a loser. You know. You know, the physicality of it. The physicality of the overachiever. You know, standing up straight, big chest out. You know, that sort of stuff. Kind of strutting into the room, underachiever, looking for the corner, wallflower kind of image, whatever you want to call it. Who knows what the physicality is? You know, shoulders slumped down. You know, the mindset. How does this character think in either one of those roles? How does this character think?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's the place to play.
Okay. Got it.
Cool. Yeah, so... This one, by the way, this last question, what roles have you been unconsciously playing? That's a great one for your buddy work together. Just explore it. Don't worry about coaching each other in some sort of like linear coaching fashion. Just allow yourselves to be in a conversation. Listen, the role of coach has a lot of rules around it. So just be person in a conversation with another person and go see what you can provoke. See what roles you've been unconsciously playing. And then recast your life. What roles will make your life sing? So that's, you know, once you poke some of these roles, you just go, wow. If that's the role I'm playing, you know, playing the role of that. Listen, playing the role of unappreciated construction worker did not make my life sing. Playing the role of desperate actor did not make my life sing. You know? Playing the role of waiter while I'm trying to be an actor did not make my life sing. How did I know? At the time when somebody looked up at me and they said, what do you do when you're not here? Oh, wait, yeah, you're an actor, with that kind of derision. And they were lucky they didn't get throttled with my apron. Clearly, in that role, while others could, I could not sing in it.
This reminds me when I reached out to you, oh my God, Michael, that's 6, 7, 8 years ago, when I was asked to produce my first show for community theater, and I was freaking out. And, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? You know, what do I have to learn? Da, da, da. And so we never talked. I just emailed you. And all you said was, just put your coach's hat on. Be curious. So that's the role I stepped into.
Right.
And it must have worked because they asked me to produce 7 more plays. So.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I mean, that was amazing.
Yeah. And you probably changed the way the role was played by not being Mr. Dictator.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And people that have been doing it for like 30 years.
Yep.
We're mad because I wasn't a control freak.
Right. Wait, he's not playing this role right.
I'm not playing this role right, you know. He's actually not doing anything.
Yeah, he's actually, and on top of it, stuff is getting done, damn it.
Yeah, that really upset a couple of people.
I'm sure.
Well, and this is surely how you didn't know how to act, because they hadn't experienced that role, and so you threw the monkey wrench in the situation.
Yes. And what we have to remember, again, going back to my frame of gamify your life, we have to remember that every role was made up at one time. That role never was on the planet. And I've made the statement with respect to jobs, for every job that ever was, at one point, it never was. So at some point in time, the role was originated. And then we've been just working derivations and permutations since. Why not create the role as if it's never been seen before? So how's that for fun?
Great.
Poke a role and then recast your life. So let me just check in with you all. Out of today, what are you going to take into your new story?
This is Margie. That it's all easy.
Great. Then I'm going to, you don't have to do this. If you have one already, then fine. And if you don't have one, you don't have to. But I'm going to recommend that you go over to Staples and pick up one of those easy buttons.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can whack it and go, that was easy.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of paraphernalia, that's the kind of artifact that somebody who takes it into the new story, is it's all easy. That's the kind of stuff they have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have a little symbolic piece. It's all easy. Yeah, that was easy. Who's next? I'd like to hear from pretty much everybody if we can.
The question was, welcome to the call. What was it again? Sorry.
Yeah. The question is, what are you going to take out of today? What are you going to take into your new story?
This is Steve.
That was easy.
That it's all made up.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
It's all made up. of it. When you really get that, what all means, all of it is all made up. Some people are terrified by that. I'm not. It's probably one of the more exciting things that I've ever come across.
Many people are terrified by it.
I know, because it presents too many choices.
People look at you like you've got like something growing out of your head, you know?
Yep.
They can't grasp that concept.
It's a challenging poke, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Because it means that we become responsible for how much we buy into what is.
Mm-hmm.
It takes courage to live from it's all made up.
I would say for me, it's reminding me of my takeaways book, the I Am Verb, Hold Leaves, Hold Us, and okay, I'm going to play the role, enjoy, play the role, hold, play, but what be that role or a good role, and as a trap of letting the role happen.
Okay, I lost part of that, but I think I got most of it. Here's the word that I heard most I'm going to share with you in the role. Play.
Yeah.
It didn't say suffer through.
Right.
You said play.
Yeah, play.
Yeah, I'm going to play the role.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the operative word. They don't call them... Hey, what are you going to go see on Brother? I'm going to go see a suffer.
Right.
Actually, I've got two tickets for a struggle. No, they're going to go see a play.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyone else? Not required to share, but if you do want to, that's fine. Going once.
This is Shirley. I'm having a hard time, so I will pass.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's valid. You know? Listen, we don't always have the answer on the moment. When we don't, it's important to either wait, let the question roll around, or just go, the way that question is phrased isn't for me. Let me just reframe it in the spirit of it, and I'll deal with it in my own time.
And I'm also noticing how I said I'm having a hard time.
Margie, send her an easy button, will you?
Really, yeah.
I know my story, my role, but thank you.
Yes, I actually got into an online forum debate with somebody about the path of least resistance and how unworthwhile they thought that was, because hard work and struggle builds character. I said, really? How fascinating. She said, yeah, if it's going to be worth anything, you have to put hard work and struggle into it. I said, so let me get this straight. If I gave you $1 million tomorrow, the $1 million that you worked harder and struggled to get would buy more than the $1 million I gave you? She said, no, but I would feel like I earned it. Oh, okay. I get the picture. To me, if somebody wants to donate $1 million to me, I will gratefully appreciate it. It will not diminish my character.
Really?
And I will absolutely enjoy whatever I buy with it. Cool. So have a great week. We're going to be coming up on the end here next week. Yes. So I'm going to also invite you to consider what you may need to experience in order for you to experience completion even if it's only temporarily with respect to this course, because I have the feeling that it's going to ripple for a while. But at the very least, with completion for attendance in the 9 sessions. So just consider what you need to experience in order for that to be real for you. And know that I am going to be, you know, like doing a commercial for Masterful Evocateur and the Be Yourself or Die Someone Else experience coming up. And, you know, just to see where else you might want to play. And I may even make that an inquiry out of the things that are available that I offer. So let me know. And have a great week poking stories, poke holes in stories. You know, if you want to, be a prosecutor and poke hole in the story that you're, like, presenting to the jury to buy. I've been living this story for a long time. Now all of a sudden you're the prosecutor going, okay, well, this doesn't hold up here, and it doesn't hold up here, and it doesn't hold up here. Oh. And experiment with a new role. And we'll see you next week, ready to play.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Bye.
Right.
Thanks,
bye,
everybody.
Michael.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.